This episode of the Talentopoly podcast is brought to you by InfloAds. InfloAds is a targeted, affordable ad network. I'm a big fan of InfloAds and have been using them since day one to get the word out about Talentopoly. Here's why I like them so much. Each publisher agrees to show one high-quality ad on each page. The ads are a combination of image and text and run within a network such as web development. Quality is the emphasis. Not only are the ads high quality, but the publishers are some of the top sites in their industry. Forrest.com recently joined the network. I routinely get conversion rates of 0.3 to 0.6% on my ads. It's incredible. The team behind the service is easy to get a hold of and will work with you to make sure your ad campaigns go smoothly. Whether you're a publisher or an advertiser, I recommend you check them out. You can find more at InfloAds.com. Now on with the show. You're listening to episode 11 of the Talentopoly podcast, where we discuss some of the best links posted on talentopoly.com each week. I'm your host, Jared Brown, and I'm joined by
me, Stephen Dixon,
and Brandon Corbin.
And we are also joined by special guest Cameron Cozon, creator of Gimme Bar and host of the Brooklyn Beta Conference. We're going to be talking about Gimme Bar tonight, but first let's get into what we're drinking. And I'll start off with you, Brandon. What are you drinking tonight?
I am drinking a nondescript red wine of some sort, and I think it might have been roofied.
Wow.
Yeah. No label, nothing. Yeah. And it's actually not bad.
No, I've heard a lot about that, too. People will bottle roofied wine so that other people will go home by themselves and drink it and just pass out.
Say, what the hell? That was amazing.
Yeah.
It's a very successful strategy.
Yeah.
Cool. So,
what about you, Jared?
I'm having some Jack Daniel's Single Barrel Select on the rocks tonight. When I was talking to Cameron last week about having him on the podcast, he was saying that he likes to drink some whiskey, sip on some whiskey. And so I had to pull out the Tennessee whiskey tonight for that purpose so that I could be drinking some whiskey too. So Steven, what are you drinking?
Tonight I'm going all out and I'm having Denmark's Finest, a pint of Carlsberg.
Wow. And that is not a tea, then.
No, it's not tea, but the color of it kind of somewhat looks like some kind of tea. So
okay, and so you're comfortable tea. Drinking it, then?
Of course I am.
Hey, Cameron, what are you drinking tonight?
I'm drinking a bourbon called Basil Hayden's in a glass.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Have you heard of whiskey stones before?
Yeah, like the ones that you're there in the freezer and you sort of drop them in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of like those. Those are kind of cool. I think that they're more cool than they are effective. Like, they're just neato.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Do they not really keep your drink cold?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good but, like, I'm a man who likes to have more than one glass of whiskey, and after one glass of whiskey, they're just kind of stones.
Yeah, exactly.
In whiskey. They're still in whiskey. They're
still
just
cool
not making
that you
it cold.
Have stones in your drink. But
yeah, well, I mean, it's cool to be like, yeah, I'll have it on the rocks. And yeah. You're like, oh, those are real rocks. Yeah, it's like that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's jump right into Gimme Bar. This is an awesome product that I think all three of us are nuts about now and have been using I've been using a little bit. I think Steven's been using a little bit more than me. But So kind of start off telling us maybe a little bit about yourself, Cameron, and then a little bit about Gimme Bar.
Yeah. Okay. I'm Cameron. I run a company called Fictive Kin, and we make. Yeah, we make a lot of stuff. We do this thing called Gimme Bar. We're involved in this conference called Brooklyn Beta. We've made a to-do list application called To Do. We've got a few other little knickknacks kind of floating around that people don't know about yet. Gimme Bar is basically an app that lets you save anything from around the web. So if you're used to bookmarking things, then just imagine that instead of bookmarking a page or an image, you save a screenshot of a page, an image, a selection of text, and you kind of save that forever. It can be backed up to Dropbox. We'll back it up to iCloud when that comes out. And so the idea is just It's a pretty user-centric idea around you just kind of own the content that you find and it doesn't change. Like, I mean, it's very easy to bookmark a page and then go back and then that page has changed or the content is gone or things like that. And so instead you just kind of own it. And that's sort of that's the gist, I'd say. I mean, people who know Pinterest, I think that people find comparisons to Pinterest. People find comparisons to Evernote. Sometimes people find comparisons to Delicious. And certainly also, like you mentioned earlier, Little Snapper. People will find comparisons to that. But it's like different from all of those and for whatever reason.
It's got a gorgeous design to it. I mean, the design, I think, really makes it stand out. This looks really nice.
You can thank Bedrich Rios for that. He's a good designer. He's our designer.
Cool.
When you started it, was the original, like, you know how we all have just that one nugget of an idea that really turns into the full thing. Was it based on the idea that when I bookmark something, a lot of times I go back and it's changed and that you wanted to have like a permanent archive? Was that kind of the core idea?
Yeah. You know, I'll be honest. I get asked a lot about where the idea came from. And I can't remember. So I really can't.
You need to make something up then, something like, you know, romantic and
that'd be great. Okay. So I was out on this date. It was going okay. I really don't remember exactly the core thing. I just got it in my head that, I'm dragging shit to my desktop, right? Or I'm dragging it to Little Snapper and it's like kind of like down, it's either like in an application or it's all in a folder. And I was like, why can't I just drag it into some? I just sort of had this idea for a bar at the bottom of the browser that you dragged anything into and you got to keep it. When I first had the idea, Dropbox wasn't a big deal. So that wasn't part of the idea initially. It was just like, you know, I really think that there's some people who want a closet full of shit or an attic full, you know, stuff and like a junk drawer. I'm one of those guys. I like to keep everything. I would just soon keep it and then maybe I'll need it later on than I would leave it. And I think that for people like that, you should have access to that collection of stuff at all times.
So a digital hoarder.
Yeah, I'm just like an all kinds of hoarder. Okay. That's just like a thing. I try not to be, but like, you know, at any moment in my life, I've always been collecting something. Like right now I collect books and vinyl records and it's a disease and I can't do anything about it. And I just have a lot of these things. And I moved to New York with two suitcases. And if I tried to leave my apartment right now, I would be filled with such shame.
Yeah. Sweet. Oh, I love it when people can admit their sicknesses like that.
Yeah. I got enough. Like I got worse than that. So I'm just giving you the level one sicknesses. So I think that's okay. It's not that impressive.
So there's a huge sharing component, like social component to Gimme Bar as well, right? The likes and... You know, you can have public collections and you can discover what other people's collections are through the discovery tab.
Yeah.
So you see that as a big part of the website as well as the like keeping it for yourself sort of thing?
Yeah, I do. The core, if we were going to pick our focus, it's around saving. We sort of rank it saving, then organizing, then sharing, then discovering. But if you're going to have a bunch of people saving cool stuff they're finding in their own individual journeys around the web, it's totally bonehead move to not let them share that and find from each other. I don't follow you guys on Gimme Bar, but I will after this this podcast, and I'll just see the cool shit that you guys find. It makes my life easier. It's a really excellent way to waste some time.
That's one of the things I love about Gimme Bar, though, because I'm always interested in what inspires the people that inspire me. And then when I go and check out their collections on Gimme Bar, I then see those inspirations. And then obviously I can get on board and then check out those and then, you know, favorite them and what have you. So I just think this is a really awesome way to kind of get into the minds of those who, you know, inspire you and whose work you like.
On that note, though, like, you know, if you think about the way these folks have been doing it until now, they've either been doing it, again, in these folders or in this Little Snapper stuff. So if we then – basically, the work that you've done before Gimme Bar came along, we need to let that get in, and then you'll see some real shit. You'll see, like, some – you know, the collections that people have built up personally to the extent that they'd be willing to share them. I think that there's going to be – in the design community, there'll probably be some hesitancy to share the things that inspire you because there's this – I think that there's this – need to be original. That's just, you should just move on like from that. And so I don't mind wearing my influences, and I hope that people will increasingly do that. But you know, I think that you'll see a lot of folks. I'm going to nudge some of the designers that I work with, folks like Simon Collison and folks like that, who I'm going to nudge them to really import everything that they've had before and have these really excellent collections. He already has really good stuff on Gimme Bar, but he's got more that he was hoarding before Gimme Bar came along. He's been on the web for a decade, right? So there's tons of stuff backed up there.
I like this idea too. Instead of it just being a bookmark, it's a gimme button. So it's like you're taking it and adding it to your collection as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that too. I think that's nice.
So as a developer, I'm kind of curious, what is this all built on? What type of technologies are you using?
I probably don't know them all, but it's mostly PHP and JavaScript. I know that there's some Node thrown in there, and I know that there's just probably whatever's cool and new that Evan and Sean and Ed and Frank are playing around with. I'm not the best guy to ask. I used to know, but not anymore. I'm a little bit, I don't contribute to the product anymore, like in a really tactical level. I just at a very, very high level, contribute to it. In terms of like the feature roadmap, is sort of mine. And, I will meet up with, our designer and just talk at a level of sketches, what we're trying to get across, just because, you know, it's tough when things are, if you're managing the roadmap and you know where the product is going, you can't always be certain that you've conveyed that to the designer in a way that lets them basically do their fucking job, right? If I don't tell Bedrich X, Y, or Z and he designs without knowing that, he's going to design a solution that doesn't take that into account, and it might be the wrong solution, but it's not his fault. It's my fault.
So for wireframes, you're just doing sketches?
Yeah, we do sketches. Like, they're adorable how sketchy the sketches are. And then it's just from there right into code.
Cool. Are those sketches maybe on a collection, like a public collection under your account?
No, we could put that. I've got them. We've got them around. We could put that up there.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be funny. I could do some funny ones too, because I've done a couple things where I changed my mind and then changed it back in a way that was kind of like, it was kind of a pain in the ass for everybody else, but yeah, you make some mistakes.
So how does the team dynamics, I'm not sure I understand who's a stakeholder in this and like, you know, how you do the division of labor. Could you just go through that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, but when you mean stakeholder, you mean like who like is,
Are they partners in it? Are you paying them to do the development? I mean, what's the structure look like?
I pay most people. It's a gradient of kind of partnership and kind of like employing people. So everybody on the team has equity in the company. And basically the folks who were on earlier, have more. So like the very first developer that we hired, was a guy named Sean Coates. So he's developer number one. We've built onto the team from there, and there's seven of us now. There's four developers, a designer, a project manager, and me.
Now, is that just for Gimme Bar, or is that for the whole, like everything that you do?
That's for everything that you know about. That's that. Yeah. There's a few little side things that are other people are doing, but like for Brooklyn Beta, for this, and I mean, we have a whole nother app that we built that people don't know about because I'm trying to think about. I actually can't say exactly why, but we killed an entire project for other reasons, basically not at all.
Did you get bought?
No, definitely not. Okay. I don't talk about that. That'd be awesome. No, I killed it. Like, I literally was like, no, we're not fucking doing this because I don't know. I don't really want to talk about that. We're a busy group for seven. And there's three other folks doing some kind of like, we call it design R&D. They're just doing some research in design. And we have four interns. We have a proper Gimme Bar intern, which is a guy named Andreas in Denmark. And he has taken over like feedback emails and tweets. We try to be really on top of that stuff, just getting back to our users. Anybody who says something nice, we want to kind of let them know that we appreciate that, because we do. And he's really taken the lead on that, which has been pretty cool. And we have some other interns doing some other stuff that are their own kind of little projects.
That's awesome.
How many people are remote versus do you guys have an office?
No, we don't have an office.
Everything's virtual. Very cool.
Yeah. Well, I work out of a studio space called Studio Mates in Brooklyn. So yeah, it's cool. It's probably the coolest co-working space around. And it's just, I don't know, man, it's a view of the Empire State Building, the Manhattan Bridge. And it's just a whole, I mean, a lot of the people that, you know, you might like, if you like design, probably a lot of people that you would think were, you know, people like Megan Fisher, Frank Camaro, Jason Santa Maria, Swiss Miss, I don't know, Josh Clark, people like that are all in one space in two rooms in Brooklyn.
That is awesome. Cool. Yeah. I think I'll have to get myself out over there.
Yeah, you should come to Brooklyn. You're more than welcome to come by, have lunch and stuff like that.
That'll be awesome, yeah.
So stats, is that something you're comfortable talking about? Are there any stats you can share about Gimme Bar at
sure.
this point?
I mean, the only stat that is probably worth sharing is we have – a little over 20,000 users. And we opened it up for a few days, like 2 or 3 weeks ago. We closed it back up. So it's not growing like it was before. But we'll see what happens after we do the invites and things like that. People still request invites and we let people in at random intervals, but we don't let everybody in.
So really I was lucky to kind of get in them, wasn't I?
It's not guaranteed at all. Although you could have just asked and I would have gotten you in. It'd been fine.
One of the things that interests me, obviously, with something like this is obviously the uptake and the whole audience that you've got to attract to kind of make something like this work, I think. So one of the interesting questions would be is, you know, how did you actually get the word around about this product?
Yeah, I you know, a lot of credit goes to Swiss Miss, who really helped us as part of like a launch, and honestly, just other friends, you know. There are friends who have, you know, a lot of people who kind of respect their opinion and were very nice about Gimme Bar, and helped spread the word. So, it's not anything really that we did. It was just kind of like kindness of friends, which was kind of nice. That felt pretty good.
So you're storing a lot of images on the site. Are you using something like S3 to store them? Do you know?
Yep.
Okay. And it doesn't look like there are any ads on the site right now.
No, there's not any ads.
So you're just paying for the storage at the moment.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we're going to do pro accounts, and the pro accounts will be a mix of some new features, but mostly just like, hey, come on. Like if you like the app and you'd like to be helpful, we'd appreciate it if you would pay this much a year, significantly less than Evernote. We don't know exactly what, couple ideas. The other thing is we'll probably put ads. If you take one of your assets and you share it on Twitter, like with the short URL, and people who are like not logged in users or maybe even logged in users, if you share something that way, we'll probably put ads on those. But we won't put ads in your library. We think of that as like your personal private space, and I just think it would be ugly to put an ad in there.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to look at doing ads. That's cool. So
sign me up for the pro account.
Thank you.
Got one pro user already.
Yeah.
So what's in store for Gimme Bar? Are there any features on the roadmap that you can talk about at this point?
Yeah, we're not very shy about sharing what we're going to do. I actually think we should be more public. Maybe I'll learn to eat those words. We're dealing with something where, so Pinterest, I don't know if you've seen Pinterest, but it's this thing and it's an app, and it's a visual bookmarking app. And, it's like very, very popular in the venture capital world. So every time I go talk to somebody, they're like all up on me about Pinterest. So I was thinking that maybe I should be a little quieter about stuff, but I'll tell you what we're going to do next anyhow, because it'll be out in, 4 or 5 weeks. We're going to do, we use what we call Site Sense to know what site you're on. And so if you're on Flickr, like, we can just make it really easy to grab the biggest Flickr image, or, you know, if you're on Epicurious, we'll make it really easy to grab a recipe, for example. So we'll add in a couple other data types like recipes, and sort of employ some sites and stuff around that so that you can kind of just grab the recipe with one button instead of having to do anything too crazy about it. We're going to do something called collaborative collections. So the four of us could have a collection that we were all contributing to, and it could be private. I think that'd be really great for like college students doing research. I think that'd be really great for like if you're a designer and you want to put together a mood board for a client, you guys can both add to it from anything you see around the web. And backups, because we want you to kind of own all your data. We're going to back up like Instagram and Twitter, so that you'll have all that shit backed up, and it'll be backed up to your Dropbox after that.
Damn. I think this might become a pretty critical tool in my toolbox. This is pretty nice.
Yeah, we'll see. I try to walk a line between putting lots of cool shit in there and that same lots of cool shit being maybe overwhelming to people. So we have to figure. I'm going to cut some stuff out. I don't like how many pages there are across the top. Library, collections, people, and discovery. I'd probably like it to just be library and discovery. So I'm going to try to think about how to do that.
Going off the your comment about Instagram there, I'm looking forward to when Gimme Bar is actually going to have that point where, like you say, you take a picture and you can share it to like a collection in Gimme Bar. So I'm actually
You'll be able to do that in like a week or two. We have an iPhone app that's almost done that lets you take a picture and upload it.
Oh, that is amazing. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're literally like final stages of bug testing on that.
You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious, what other products or trends in the industry do you find exciting right now?
I am not a good person to ask because I think that most web products are very, very bad. I try really hard to find like heroes. Like I want to look up to some startups. I want to look up to some products. And on the web, there's just not that many. There's two big ones that I still love in general, which is Kickstarter and Airbnb. I like those a lot. I think that they're important products and I think they're well executed and their teams. I've met people on, you know, the co-founders of both those teams and they're excellent people. So I like that. The two things that I think are kind of neato that I'd like to see a little bit more of is IFTTT and Code Academy.
Yes. Yeah, we're big fans of both, actually. Covered both in the podcast before.
Yeah, I think that those two folks are doing some right stuff there. I can't wait to see how it unfolds. Code Academy, I always thought that, like, you know, this is not me trying to take credit for some their fucking idea. I just always thought that that's the way that you should teach that shit, and they just did it really, really well. So I'm really glad. And so I'm hoping that the response they got was excellent. So hopefully they feel very, you know, I don't know, they feel like the wind is at their back on this and they'll make a bunch of things like that. I think that'd be really, really cool.
For sure. Code Academy is a Y Combinator startup, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I remember, if this is right, I remember that they were doing something different and it got closer and closer to demo day and whatever they were doing wasn't really working.
Yeah, it kind of sucked. They switched it up. Yeah, it's a nice story. Totally I like that. Yeah. So. If those guys are listening, I want to come drink with me in Brooklyn. Let's hang out. I want to talk to those people.
Awesome. And then Brooklyn Beta is also coming up real quick, right?
That's cool. Yes, that is coming up very, 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 very quickly.
So what made you want to do a conference?
So I wanted to do a conference because I don't like conferences. I'm maybe a little bit of a curmudgeon. I don't know. I just really like well-executed things, and most conferences are super fucking boring. I mean, you know, man, I'm not like a designer by trade. I'm not a developer by trade. I fucking went to business school. After business school, I taught myself front-end development. I taught myself design. And I'm going to these conferences called things like Future of Web Design and learning zero new things, right? I'm like, this is bad. If I'm a noob and I'm way the fuck ahead of a conference like this, like, there's something very, very wrong. And I paid $0. I had a company pay once for something like that, and I got to go for it. It's just not very good. I just thought it would be cool. I went to a conference with Chris Shiflett, who co-organizes it with me. And we both basically just had a terrible conference experience at the exact same time. And we ducked out early. And at the time, he's kind of a beer nut. And at the time, he got me all into these the hell was that beer called? One of those really dark beers that, you know, they happen to have at some bar across the street from this conference. And then we killed the last few hours there. And kind of, I feel like that's where we came up with the idea. And then later on, Simon Collison happened to be in town visiting just to visit Studio Mates and visit New York. And he had also been kind of having this itch. And I think the three of us got all of each other worked up. And out of it came Brooklyn Beta and New Adventures Conference. So that's cool.
Yeah, that's a cool story. I like that.
I've got a question for the Brooklyn Beta. Obviously, you've got some big names on there. And my question would be is, how did you initially get it out to everyone? I mean, do you know some of these personally who know these other people? Or
Yeah, I feel like I know at this point, I know most of the people attending the conference. When I moved to New York, let me think here. Tina Swiss Miss really deserves a ton of credit too, because she just fucking knows everybody, and it's about the most generous lady you'll ever meet. And when I moved to New York, I didn't know really very much anybody. And so she introduced me to a bunch of these folks, and she knew some others. So when we did Brooklyn Beta version one, there were some people like New Yorkers that we could reach out to and email and say, hey, you know, we're doing this conference. There's no reason for you to believe that we can do a good conference, but it's only $20. So why the fuck not? Why don't you come on over and hang out in this cool thing? We had known Simon, like, oh, and Chris Shiflett knows a bunch of folks, like knows a bunch of developers, and John Tan, who's the designer who works with Chris at Analog, and their company's called Mapalong. He knows a bunch of British folks. So, you know, between, I was kind of the weak link in terms of actually like, bringing people to the table on that. I had to make up for it with just sort of like being the most charming of everybody there.
Right on.
It was a joke. I didn't land it. Yeah. Thank you.
No, you know what? You are charming.
Crowd. No.
No, seriously. I mean, it comes across. It's a nice New York charm.
All right. You know, I'm from San Diego, though, right?
Well, no. Yeah, you can definitely tell. It's how long have you been in New York now?
A couple years.
Yeah.
It hasn't rubbed off yet. I don't think it has.
The San Diego or the New York?
No, the New York. I don't sense a New York attitude.
Oh man, you know what? I'll tell you a great little saying. I lived in LA for a while, and I've lived here, and I love this saying. If you've ever been to either of those fucking places, it nails it on the noggin. And it's like in LA, everyone's nice to you, but they don't mean it. And in New York, everybody's mean to you, but they don't mean it. Like, it's just generally kind of like grumpy, you know, like, hey, I'm walking here kind of shit.
Yeah.
But like, very, very nice people. I can't, like, between studio mates and like my neighborhood, I got a good little coffee joint going over here. Like, I've got a pretty nice setup of just general happy kind of Sesame Street kind of shit, but with like bags of trash on the sidewalk and like, which I guess is Sesame Street, right? There's trash cans everywhere. So yeah, I don't know. Like, so I don't think it's as grumpy. I mean, honestly, that this is the truth, is that now, like, modern day New York that I live in is like New York Disneyland. It doesn't have the grittiness. Brooklyn is maybe a little bit better, but it doesn't have the grittiness of, you know, like a Kojak or some fucking like 1970s, like where there's like serious amounts of prostitutes everywhere and like heroin is just like happening around you. So it's kind of nicer now.
I like the New York attitude sometimes, though. Like when you go to that pizzeria, you know, just in the middle of nowhere, and you're kind of, I don't know what I want. He's like, come on, what do you want? You know, tell me your order.
It's awesome. I there's things that I notice about myself. I really can't stand people walking slowly. It's like if you drive, right, you might have like road rage. I've developed like walking rage. I want to be like, what the fuck is your problem? Why are you walking at whatever that gate is that you're walking that's too slow for me? And she's like, well, because I'm like a foot shorter than you. I'm like, that's no excuse. Pick up the pace. Like, it's just, you just get into this weird thing. There's also this pizza joint like that. This is a real pizza joint on, it's like four or five blocks from here. It's run by this guy, Louie. And it's run by him. So if he turned the entire restaurant off for a month. He's like, I'm going on vacation, so there's no restaurant. It's just not a restaurant. And my favorite story is one that Jason Santa Maria tells. And it's Saturday night, and Saturday night gets a little busy. And this guy, he's got like a Brooklyn accent that I can't nail, but I'm gonna try it anyhow. And he's like, you know, these people are there, and it's just crowded. And they're like, oh, how long's the wait? And he's like, 30 minutes. And they're like, oh, 30 minutes. He's like, you don't like it? Get the fuck out. Like, I love it. Just give it that kind of sass.
That's great.
It's good. Louis, he's a nice guy.
Yeah. Cool.
Sorry. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about anymore.
I like it. It's entertaining. So thanks for talking to us about Gimme Bar. I think we'll jump into some articles here and get your take on some of these, Cameron.
Yeah, sure. I don't know much.
Yeah, article number one, Layer Vault, Simple Version Control for Designers. This is a new product. I think it is invite only still. And it's basically, you know, like a lot of designers, they probably have developer friends. And when they talk about, you know, how to, I'm trying to figure out how to store all my PSDs and my AI files and try to keep it straight. And I'm sure every developer out there says, we'll just use Git or Subversion or something. And designers don't want to mess with that shit. So Layer Vault is version control for designers, where it works kind of like Dropbox, but it's going to actually version control all of your files. It will find the PSDs and the AI files and save out copies to the cloud of everything you're working on. So you can go back in time, kind of like what, you know, I guess Mac OS Lion is going to be doing, and, you know, all the rest of that version stuff that it has built into it. Layer Vault is that for multiple operating systems. What do you think, Steven?
Well, when you showed me this originally, you know, I was all for it. But then having just recently switched from Photoshop to Fireworks for, you know, like practically all design now, they don't support like the Fireworks PNG. So, you know, I was kind of like, okay. But hopefully they might do that, you know, include that at some point. But definitely when you watch the video, it is killer stuff. So obviously, you know, if you do design in solely just Photoshop or Illustrator, then it's awesome.
Yeah, I'm sure though. I mean, I'm expecting they would add other file formats over time to this thing. It seems like it's ripe for, you know, adding additional formats and continuing to expand this thing. It's pretty sweet. And there's a web interface to it too. So you can actually log in, much like, you know, designers, developer friends are probably doing with GitHub. You can log into this guy and you can see, you know, the different versions of stuff that you're working on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want designers to use Git, like just use Git. Like it's not that difficult. Like, I mean, I'm not trying to knock Layer Vault. I just was looking at it. It looks kind of pretty, yeah. But like, it's just like designers are like these coddled children that like, oh God, well look, we can't scare them with technology or like, you know, monotype, you know, in a fucking little box. Like Simon Collison, we were working with him on something and he was like a little bit resistant to Git, and now he's totally on board and loving it, right? And him and Greg use it for a guy named Greg Wood use it for design stuff they're using right now. And it's like that's gonna sync up with a team. Like if you want to make a product, that's gonna sync up with the team because the developers are already using it.
That's a super good point. Is that you already have your code in Git? It's just natural to put your design resources in there for sure. I'm kind of interested. Do you know if they're using a GUI or are they totally comfortable with the command line for Git?
I think they're comfortable. I mean, they're comfortable with the basics of it, right? Git pull and Git push. But right.
They're not rebasing or like re-re-reing or some of the more advanced stuff.
No, exactly.
Right on. Cool. So that's Layer Vault. Our second article is notify.aio, web notification system supporting Growl, Snarl, Prowl, and many others. What this basically is, and I'm kind of excited about this. What this is that it has the ability to tie in any sort of web service into your client-side, your OS notifications. So you're already used to getting notifications through Growl or whatever for when something comes in over your client-side Twitter app or Sparrow on the Mac or whatever. Now you could actually get, you know, you could tie in things like, hey, you know, if somebody just, you know, something on Gimme Bar, some kind of notification from Gimme Bar could actually be tied into whatever you're using on your OS, which seems super cool. Is this something you guys could see yourself using?
No.
That's just a flat no.
Well, unless somebody like incorporates it and it's super easy to just use, then.
Well, it has a web interface to it where you can set stuff up. And
I could see myself using it. And maybe even if it's just for the Jabber integration. I mean, I would use it for my own stuff for Prowl or for Growl and maybe Prowl as well. But yeah, in terms of thinking about what kind of triggers I could do, you know, if I do know somebody's Gmail address, then hypothetically I'd be able to, you know, trigger off instant message alerts and stuff like that. But I like the idea. I didn't have much luck kind of getting it set up the, you know, 20 minutes before we started the show. So I kind of gave up, but I think it's a pretty cool concept. Now it really comes down to what people do with it that makes it interesting or not.
Yeah,
but it is pretty clever. I think it's super clever. We use IRC a lot for our team, so I get like almost too many notifications already. So I don't think it's like a great fit for me, but like, I think that, yeah, I kind of hope that this gets picked up because it's just kind of a cool idea. I like that. That's the kind of thing that I really like somebody making. It just seems pretty nice. Clearly a developer made it. So it's,
yeah. I like the mashup capability of it, you know, the potential of just discovering cool ways to connect this to other services. I'm kind of thinking that if this, then that might have some cool interplay with this thing.
Yeah, I like how we're dumbing down like programming and things like that. That's cool. Like, it's Yahoo Pipes like done well, plus like, yeah, I don't know. Totally. It's really neat.
Totally. And plus one for Yahoo Pipes mention. That's awesome.
It does need a little design love.
Yeah, but that goes back to the developer created it for sure.
Yeah, but that's okay. I mean, the notification, he doesn't need to design a rounded black rectangle, right? Like, it's like, okay, that was pretty easy. So like, if his site's not that great, it's okay. As long as it works, I think I'd be pretty happy with that.
Agreed. Cool. So article number 3, Firefox creator says the web is dead meat. Android creator disagrees.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. So Joe Hewitt, who is a co-creator of Firefox, he's also worked at Facebook. He made the Facebook iOS app and got pretty fed up with dealing with Apple and their walled garden and trying to get updates in through that. So he decided to leave Facebook and focus on HTML5 mobile development. And now I guess he's fed up with that. So he wrote a blog post.
Dude, he just seems peeved because his browser's dying off. That's basically what it is.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that is sad, man. The fact that Firefox is the browser that we like have to like finagle with instead of IE is such a bummer for me and for like even a lot of people on my team. But that article is pretty interesting, I think. I don't know that guy, but I kind of would like to. That's a pretty interesting thing to be thrown out there on the web. I mean, I'm sure he's going to get a lot of haters from that, but I think there's some solid points in that. I actually happened to read that today, but by luck. I think it's pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah, so he makes this point that the web really should have one entity in charge of it, or one, you know, company, person, whatever, in charge of it, that is driving it forward, trying to get cutting-edge capabilities in a timely manner is the key. That's what he wants for the web. His big example is camera access, and why the hell can we not access the camera on mobile, mobile Safari or mobile whatever of these devices that you're on? He thinks that's horrible.
Yeah. I mean, standards boards, I don't know. I don't know enough to be – I'm not even going to actually say anything. I'm gonna keep quiet on it. But generally, large groups of people making decisions is not as effective as smaller groups or one person making those decisions. I don't know.
And standards boards, a lot of, especially the internet ones, seem to move very, very slowly. So I could see some frustration. But it does seem kind of like, you know, Joe seems like an amazing developer, and he's done some, Firebug is another thing that he created, and I use that every single day. You know, I still use Firefox pretty much daily. Chrome's my biggest browser, but I love Firefox still. I mean, but he does kind of whip up a shitstorm wherever he is playing. And it seems like it generates results, so maybe it works.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. I mean, if he knew that and he was just trying to flex that muscle, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, so hopefully that's what it is and not just writing some contrarian blog post out of pure frustration.
Yeah.
All right. Brandon, did you have any other thoughts on that, or are you good?
No, I'm good.
All right. So article number 4, staying passionate and motivated as a web designer. And it basically goes over a few really good points about, especially I think this holds true if you happen to be a freelance designer, somebody that works from home, you know, you probably aren't getting too much social interaction, but you should try, you know, finding new tools, new techniques to be working on. Try to switch it up from time to time. Attend conferences, you know, get out.
The example they choose is future of web design. They suck it, article writer. Brooklyn Beta, ever heard of it?
Exactly. Exactly.
I don't mean that, article writer. You're very nice. Oh, man, we're not even in the secondary list. I take it back again. I mean it.
Suck it. Suck yeah. It.
Future of web design and event apart. Those people are cool. Build. Okay, I like build. AIGA gain. Oh, man, I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to get in trouble. What is AIGA gain? All right, I'm out. I'm backing out.
I don't know.
It's all right.
South by Brooklyn Southwest. Beta,
that's
and
alliteration.
Ted are on there.
Alliteration. That's when you use the same letter twice. That's awesome stuff.
It is awesome. It makes it 10 times more awesome to do that.
Yeah. Oh, AIGA gain is. No, that's nothing there for him. Nope. Never mind.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious. What is this? This is.
I don't know. It's blue.
Design reinvents. It's a design and business conference. Yeah, that sounds super boring.
They got me, the AIGA got me grumpy because they scheduled their conference for the same time as our conference. And they got people who I would love to have, like, be hanging out at our conference to speak at theirs. And people who were at our conference last year. So they keep taking people away, which is sad.
Yeah, that is sad. All right. Well, basically get out to some meetups, start a personal project, work on an internal project, and just go out and, you know, try to do new things so that you don't get too demotivated, because we need more good web designers and we don't want you guys to get demotivated. So, Steven, do you ever find yourself getting low on designer morale?
Yeah, when a client gets me to do something that looks horrible. Yeah, that's when I get demotivated.
And then what do you do?
I then pretend it looks good. I get drunk and then I start to look at it that way. And when I'm drunk, then yeah, it looks good. I don't really do that, but staying passionate. How do I stay passionate? I don't know. You just got to have a natural love for what you do, whether you get paid for it, maybe, or whether you don't get paid for it or not as much. And, you know, I just get motivated by reading these kinds of articles, staying, you know, active on Twitter, seeing what all the other, you know, great designers out there are doing, and obviously checking out projects. And that's obviously how I came across Gimme Bar. So I open up Gimme Bar every morning just to check what, you know, what's been added on there and what new content is on there and stuff like that. So
yeah,
it's all about finding the right set of tools and the right mindset and the right schedule. And if you get those three things, then, you know, boom.
What about redesigning your portfolio? Isn't that like what every designer does when they get fed up with working on client projects?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so I'm redesigning my portfolio, but I'm doing it for the reason that I wanted to reflect more of like what I can do now. Because if you go on it now, it's okay. It's got some good feedback, but it's not the best.
sdixondesign.com or which one is yours?
StephenMDixon.com.
All right.
But you know, the total redesign, to me, redesign your portfolio is probably one of the best things you could do when you do have free time, because it's your own project. There's really no limitation, so you can add anything you want and you can do anything you want. There's no budget to work to, no time scale, and you can kind of really just re-motivate yourself. So I've made my site, for example, all responsive. So if you were to view this this redesign that I've done, you see it's all responsive and it's all good looking in that way. And that's kind of motivated me to, you know, keep on doing that good, you know, that kind of good work and whatnot. So that's my take on it.
Hey, Steven, how many, you know, you described like clients basically getting in the way of work that you would sort of think of as better work. What's the ratio in terms of client work of it going great and your client just being like, yeah, man, I trust you. You just design away. And them sort of taking over the reins and it ending up not being in a place that you'd love?
I'd say all of those experiences were when I were employed by other companies, because, you know, I'm designing something like with nice white space here and there and, you know, nice proportionally spaced, you know, text and all this business. But then, for example, someone higher up than me would come along and say, no, it needs to be more squished together. So really I'm not getting the whole, you know, my design's basically just being hindered then, or the whole process is. But that was only when I was employed. So obviously now as a freelancer, you know, I'm more more free to do what I want, but I'm also more expressive in how, you know, how I express my ideas to the client, how I will ensure them that it will work what I'm doing, you know, because they might be like, well, I'm not too sure about this color, but then I'll just say to them, well, you know, let me just work it in there and, you know, take a look at it. And if you like it, we'll go with it. And, you know, that always works for me.
Okay. So you, now that you're freelance, does like your clients are all just like, yeah, just total freedom to get it done. They do not hinder you from like doing great design.
No, I mean, I'm looking to have that freedom because, you know, I know what it's like to, you know, I've got this site that looks awesome, but no, they don't want that. They want it all, you know, they want it like something else. They want their branding colors in that, the most horrid concoction of colors. And I'm like, well, no, maybe you should just try redo this. And, but yeah, I don't get that anymore.
Cool. Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. I've never heard that. You're like a diamond in the rough.
Yeah, for sure.
It's more about finding the best people to work with, I think, as well.
Cool. Brandon, have you passed out from drinking too much wine?
No, I'm just enjoying listening to your guys' conversation. I'm just kind of going through and playing with all these little websites and yeah, no, it's pretty cool.
Cool. All right. Well, let's move on to article number 5. Critics call foul as Google takes aim at JavaScript with Dart. Did you get a chance to look this over, Brandon?
Yeah, I think this is somewhat of a sensational headline, to be honest with you. Because really, I mean, what Google's proposing here is that they want to come up with a new language, just like kind of is the progress of, I mean, we're not all doing BASIC anymore. That they say, look, we need to have JavaScript, and we hopefully can make it where, you know, you can do stuff in Dart and it gets compiled down to JavaScript so we can have a good transition period. And it's like 5 to 6 years. So it's definitely more of a sensational headline. And the fact that we can't even see what Dart looks like, I think it's way too early to be, you know, casting stones. Now, I hope that they make it. Again, I always kind of go back to, I hope it's a language that isn't just, you know, another one built on top of something else where you have to be pretty smart to learn it. I like having some that are a little bit simpler that, you know, the common man is able to kind of just start getting their hands dirty and playing around and getting results. That's the only thing I really care about. I think the article, it was it was just to drive eyeballs, I think.
Yeah. Well, JavaScript was kind of rushed when they worked on it back at Netscape, and it seems like it's got some weird shit in it that kind of rubs developers the wrong way. I mean, do you think that it's a decent concept to try to replace it, or is it because it's already baked into everything, let's keep rolling ahead with it?
No, I mean, I think for us to just keep evolving as a civilization, you know, always we're going to have new languages. I mean, I like the idea of them trying to incorporate, you know, native code into this stuff. So anything that just gives us more ways of kind of developing and thinking about things, I think is a good thing. So would I have a problem if, you know, in the next 6 years, Dart becomes a standard and JavaScript isn't? No, you know, as long as I know Dart, hopefully I do. And if not, then, you know, I become a manager.
I hope Google don't approach this like they did with WebM, you know, like how they just one day just stopped doing H.264 and just went with the WebM. You know, okay.
Yeah, I don't think they'll do that. They rely entirely too much on JavaScript. I mean, you know, the browser, until all browsers support it, I mean, we still are at the mercy of IE6 for the most part. So, you know, it's definitely going to take time to make that kind of transition. But what really is going to happen is if the language is so much more powerful that you can do a lot more killer things with it, that all of a sudden all of these like top-notch dudes are, you know, creating apps and creating experiences that just blow everybody else out of the water, then that makes that change happen a lot quicker. And if not, then no one really gives a shit and everybody just keeps working in JavaScript.
Yeah. I think the way that Google is doing this, behind closed doors, at least to start with, I think that creates a negativity around it. And I think, you know, like the creator of JavaScript, Brendan Eich, he's actually come out and expressed his disappointment in the way that Google's doing this behind closed doors.
But isn't that what that last article was, how the web is dying and that we need somebody to kind of stand up for the web and be able to make the kind of those decisions and get things done quick and then release it? You know, it's kind of...
That's a good point.
It might be two and the same.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, Cameron, did you have any thoughts on this one since you're an avid JavaScript developer?
No, maybe the other guys would, but that was nice. I think you did an excellent job, Brandon.
Cool.
Thanks.
All right. Article number 6. 11
I'm all over number 6.
11 mobile apps for web designers to download. Let's go through this list real quick. I'm kind of interested to hear which ones you guys use. Do you guys use Evernote? Any Evernote users
yes.
among us? Okay. Cool. I never got into Evernote personally.
I love Evernote. I mean, do either any of you guys know if there's a way to sync my Google Docs and my Evernote? Because I kind of I use them randomly. It's like I don't use one exclusively for something else. So I've got a mishmash of documents all over the place. I need to find a way of merging them all. But no, I like it as far as an app goes.
I remember the demo way back when of them. They had a picture of a bottle with a label on it. And they could do the image, the character recognition off of that image. So you could just search for, like, what was that sake that I had year ago?
I do it with business cards. Business cards all the time. Like, give me your business card. Just let me take a photo of it. And then I can search, you know, throughout the whole thing.
That's pretty smart. I like that. So, okay, Dropbox. Are we all Dropbox users here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, super useful. Very cool. Things. How about to-do list management? Do you have a favorite app for to-do list management?
It's called the Corbinizer.
You talked about this in the last one. That's you print
Corbinizer.com.
It out, right?
You it's print it out, you fold it. It's a piece of paper, and you have to bring your own damn pen. But I'll tell you what, I never forget anything, and it's very easy to add.
There's so many bugs in it, though. I hate that thing.
It never crashes. It might get wet, though. That's the problem.
Dude, I'm going to declare official shenanigans on this list of 11 apps. Also, this is the app that we created. Like, this is, I feel like this list should have been made like 4 years ago.
Yes,
like,
agreed.
Things, yeah. One, I'll plug my own fucking thing, which is To-Do, which is way better. But also, if you like the Things style, Wunderlist owns Things. Mm-hmm. And Wunderlist costs, I think, $0 is the current price.
It's free.
Versus Things, which is like, whatever, $1,000. And they never innovate at all. WordPress, there's no Instapaper on here, but there's WordPress. Come on. Color Expert Pro. Yeah, on the go, I need to get Pantone 186C. Cam Scanner Pro. I mean, I just could not disagree with this list.
But there's more. Ballin. Ballin is,
yeah,
on here.
Ballin. Yeah. No, maybe the font one. That one's okay. You take a picture. If it's really good and you see some font on like a menu or something like that, okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's pretty
But Billings
sweet.
Touch, you've got your own. You're either using FreshBooks or Harvest or something like that. Evernote. Okay. And is that for a web designer or for a human being? Right? Evernote and Dropbox, you know, maybe Dropbox especially for a human being. Anyhow, that's all. I just wanted to declare shenanigans on this article.
This one seemed to be like, hey, I got an idea for a post. Oh, I really don't want to do it. So I'm just going to go try to find like five other posts that have like two ones each.
This guy's the founder of this thing. He's the founder of Underworld Magazines. And he named his thing Plural Magazines.
You know, it was a slow news day.
I don't hang out on the internet. Is this a really popular? Was this like on like Reddit or new Hacker News or something like that, or Smashing? Where was this?
It was on Talonopoly. Thank you very much.
I don't even. I think I posted it, and I don't remember where I even found this from.
Yeah, you found it from underworldmagazines.com. /11-mobile-apps-4-web- Oh my God, too many dashes.
I found it on Delicious Popular because that's not gamed or anything.
Yeah.
Right. Awesome. I think that's the best article review we've ever had, honestly. That was amazing. Yeah,
well, sometimes shenanigans needs to be called. That's
it does. All right, let's move on to article number 7. Searchable dynamic content with Ajax crawling. And by now, most of our listeners are probably... gone to sleep just from that title.
Yeah. I read about it before. It's like hashbang, got it.
Yeah. Well, for the people that don't know, we'll cover this in 60 seconds or less. This is the hashbang style of doing JavaScript powered websites that, you know, like Twitter and Lifehacker and a lot of these other sites are doing now. That if you don't know and you really are dying to create a JavaScript engine to go out and grab your page content. Which I don't quite understand the huge need for doing this, but there is a way, and Google has come up with a way using these fragments that it can still be crawled because Google can't crawl the JavaScript, that you can do all of this JavaScript goodness and still create this kind of backdoor for the Google crawler to come in and get all of your content. So you'll still be ranked highly, hopefully, within Google. So if that's something you've been interested in doing, you should check out this article. And go and make your site do this. That's all I have to say about that. Do you guys have anything to add for that? All right. We'll move on. Article number 8. What does a website cost? And this is a user contributed via Twitter website where you can add different things you should be considering when quoting out the price of a website to your client. So they've got some interesting ones on here. Like, let's see. Does the website need to scale to handle large numbers of visitors? Do you have any specific accessibility requirements, such as AAA levels of accessibility? You know, just a bunch of different things that you might not think about to talk to a client. I could see having this open if you're on the, you know, if you're having a conference call with a client and you just want to use this to kind of jog your memory, what type of stuff to bring up.
Yeah. Do you know who made this? No. This is very pretty.
Off-road
very
code. Well, Off-road code is the company, I think. Yes.
Cool. Well done, Off-road code.
Yeah, it looks it's pretty nice. It's simple.
It's a cool idea. You see the fucking string thing? That's kind of neat.
See the what?
Like if you click on it says what show me the funny string.
Oh yeah.
That's pretty neato, torpedo.
Yeah. Just infinite scrolling all the way down.
I love it.
That is cool. It's a good weekend project. It probably gets a good amount of hits. It's been tweeted 590 times, which is kind of
neat. Yeah, it's definitely just call these reputation projects, man. It's really nice to get some of that in when you're starting out. You know, early on, I feel like you just want to like let people know that you're serious business, because it's difficult. You can't just say, hey, I'm serious business. You have to like be like, hey, I made that thing. And then people like then translate that into their head. Like, oh, this person's serious business.
Yes. And you, everybody should be serious business.
Yeah. If only.
All right.
Sweet.
Is that it for that article? Let's move on. Article number 9, coding stage. And this is posted by Melanie Archer. This came up in a chat with a bunch of Talentopoly users last Friday. Melanie brought this up, and you know, it seemed like such a cool idea that we, you know, shamed her into posting it on Talentopoly. And here we are talking about it. This is a way for you to kind of walk through how to code different things. You have somebody who's hosting a session, you know, like one here is Node and Redis, and you actually see the code. So they've got this example code. You can see what they're typing in. You've got a little chat window off to the side. You know, you can see who's watching this right now and talk to the person leading the whole thing, the person up on the coding stage while they super go through cool how to do this stuff. And well, you can actually run the code. You can run the code, which is, that seems really cool.
Yeah, this is a good internet work right here. Well done.
Yeah, and it has the Facebook vote over here. What is this all about with 53?
Hey, who's watching? Brandon, I bet that's you.
I'm here, man.
You see Cameron there? That's me. I'm that Cameron.
I know. I just was about to say that as soon as you said it. I'm actually looking at the comments where it's like, Sam says test. One says one. Yeah. HGF, HGF.
Yeah.
Some guy says, fuck you.
That's a high-level discourse. No, his username is fuck. And his comment is foo.
So... And Null is in here too, which is always good when you have Null watching.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, our last article. Article number 10 is Simple Grid. And I want to hear from Steven. This comes from Steven. It looks like a really cool grid system. And let's hear in Steven's words why he loves this thing.
Okay, well, okay.
It's responsive. So, what are you talking about? You should hate this.
No, Steven is like he's a convert. He converted in the last couple of days to responsive design.
Dude, I could spend about an hour explaining the reason why, but anyway. So about Simple Grid. Well, the thing is when I was making my site responsive, I was kind of looking at all the different angles I could, tackle it at. And I was looking at various different grid systems out there, and this one to me seemed like an awesome grid, because it's really the only one that is, you know, without a pun intended, but is really simple to kind of integrate and get it working. It's pretty hot stuff if you're into grids. Personally, the grid system doesn't fit in with my new redesign because it's basically just a one column thing. So there's just a few little CSS tweaks to make it responsive, but if you're looking at a grid system, look at Simple Grid. It's responsive, infinite nesting, one class per element, simple. Boom.
It's definitely. I've worked with the 960 grid system, and this is way more simple than 960. So I kind of like that.
Yeah, the best thing about this, I think, well, not that I think I know, is the fact that the there's less markup, which is always a good thing. You know, I've seen some grid systems that are just too, you know, they're just too busy. And this is just ultra simple. And, you know, the effects it has, as you can see when you resize the window, it's just awesome. And that literally could happen to your site, like, within 5 minutes of integrating it. So.
Two things, okay? I'm going to run you guys over your time limit, okay? Because there's two things. One, okay, this lady's name is Melanie Archer, and I can't get out of my head because you're British. So have you seen the show Archer? Do you guys all watch the show Archer?
Negative. I've never seen that.
All of you are negative on watching Archer? You guys need to read less internet articles and watch a lot more Archer. It's one of the funniest shows on television. Had these my two British designers I work with were in town, and we did a television show trade where they brought some cool British comedy, and we sent them back with Archer. And that is just money city. Need to watch that. Two.
Wait, where can I watch it?
On the internet. You can probably buy it from iTunes. You probably have to buy it from iTunes, or you have to get it in one of the illicit ways that people gets video.
So it's not on Hulu, Netflix or Hulu. Yeah.
It's not on it. I mean, it was on Hulu, but anything that's good that's on Hulu, once they find out it's good, they take it off Hulu. Like, this is too good to be on Hulu. Fucking leave this other stuff. Like, if we go to Hulu's homepage right now, it's like the Playboy murder or something. It's all really stupid.
Can I share complete episodes on Gimme Bar?
I mean, if it was on YouTube, you could, but then it would just get taken down. We don't say videos because I don't really want to get sued anytime soon. So yeah. Yeah. Hulu, we can watch Parenthood, Glee, New Girl, Body of Proof, and The Playboy Club.
Oh, those are the best ones, man.
Yeah. The other thing is, I really want to hear a little bit more about your whole responsive conversion thing where you were a hater and now you're a lover.
He was. As of last week, he was a total hater. And unfortunately, we have these like Steven hate fests before the podcast starts, and I wish we captured more of them.
Yeah.
So, Steven, okay, catch listeners up.
Okay, so... Right. So, I started getting into responsive design, and, you know, I was all for it. And then when I actually started incorporating it into projects, you know, it was all good and well. But then when I started viewing a lot of responsive sites on my iPhone, I was then kind of thinking, I started asking a lot of questions. I started asking why. So why would I make a site responsive? And why would I take away a lot of the multi-touch gestures when you're browsing in Safari on your iPhone? Why would I take that away from a user? And I kind of went on this trail of asking why, and not a lot of positives were coming out of it. And it was just a few days ago, my brother... he's always changing phones. So now he's got a BlackBerry. He's got an iPhone 4, but he's got this the new BlackBerry Bold. So I visit a few sites I've designed on there, and then I visit some other sites that obviously aren't responsive. And the text on that display is tiny. So I thought, okay, that's interesting. So then when he has to zoom in, he then has to scroll left and right and all over the place, which isn't it's not a good user experience.
No.
So what I did is then I went on a responsive website. So I went on Think Vitamin. And
you say vitamin.
Sorry. It's awesome.
Think vitamin.
Can yeah, you there you go. You nailed it.
Have you heard aluminum yet?
Yeah, aluminium. Yeah, I hang on. I just had never heard vitamin.
I don't think you've said it yet, Steven. You haven't fulfilled your quota for this episode.
Aluminium.
There we go.
Yeah, so
I thought he was gonna say something like feisting. Wasn't his keyword feisting or something like that?
It was something similar to that.
Yeah.
What was it exactly, Steven? We can't remember.
Fisting.
Yeah, he said it.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. Done.
You yes. lowered yourself. All right.
So I went on Vitamins website, and the text, it loaded crisp. It was just beautiful. It was displayed beautiful on this display, this small display. And it just kind of hit me that, you know, just designing, because I was thinking of different solutions. So, you know, is sending someone to a mobile site, m.whatever the domain name is, is it better to send a user to that if you're on a mobile device, or is it better to bake it all in? What is the best way, or is it better to redesign it and make it all app-like? But then the whole way we do responsive design, how responsive web design is incorporated today, it's friendly to all these different browsers, to all these different platforms like your iPhone, BlackBerry, you know, because we're not all iPhone users. You know, there's a vast market out there of BlackBerry users, Android users. And it's a case of, like, when you're doing web design, you don't want to forget about IE. As much as you might not like it, there's some people out there that do like it and all that business, so you've got to cater for all that. So, it kind of just confirmed something. So it wasn't that I was... despite a few things I might have said, it wasn't that I was solely against it. It's the fact I wanted to find out if it's the best way to go about this whole designing for mobile.
Have you read a Book Apart, Ethan Marcotte one on responsive web design?
No, I've downloaded the sample.
I heard that it's excellent and very, very funny, and maybe makes the pitch really, really well. I also really like, I'm actually, after this, I'm going to go help a buddy of mine named Yaron do IKEA, put together IKEA stuff, but that's like that I just put into Skype, like that's responsive and that's just a knockout of a site. So if you haven't seen that, like I think that executes it really well in a way that on your phone it's like a real treat to look at.
So after like asking why and all this, it just seemed right, it just seemed relevant what was happening, and I'm glad I went down the path of questioning it rather than just going along with it, you know.
Definitely.
I feel better for that, because then if someone says to me, look, dude, why are you doing this responsive? Then I've got the answers. I can tell them and I can say to them, look, I actually didn't like it, or that I thought there might have been something better, but you know, no, definitely. So I'm glad I went down the route that I did.
Very cool.
So that's my story. And I know we've gone over the time, but
no, it's great.
You know.
Are you going to go to new adventures in Nottingham?
The tickets are sold out. I have emailed the man in charge to see if there are any spare tickets floating about, or if they will be. So I assume I'm on a waiting list. But
yeah, nudge him again. I'm talking at that one. That's the only time I'm ever going to talk. I think I'm not going to be a big talker guy. But that one, I'm going to go to that one, and that's going to be. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Simon, I mean, Nottingham's a lot of fun. Simon puts on a good conference, and in general, yeah. The after. I mean, for me, it's the space between the conference that's actually enjoyable, much more so than the conference. So. Now, even my own talk is going to be boring relative to the evening after the conference is done. I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Awesome. After our call on Friday, I was kind of nudging him. I'm like, dude, you should go to that one. And he looked into it. Like, ah, bummer. It's sold out. But maybe you can get a ticket. Maybe.
And build, right? What about build? Yeah, I think probably we can nudge Simon on that. That's probably totally doable.
You should do
that. But what about build too? Did you get tickets? Are you just sleeping on getting tickets for these things that are in your backyard?
No, I have actually bought a ticket for ValeoCon, which I'm going to next year.
Yeah, it's in San Diego. That's not your backyard. That's like somebody else's. Yeah. That's my backyard.
Yeah, but still, it's all good. Yeah.
That's cool. I like that guy, Drew. He's a talented guy.
He's a cool guy. Are you going to that one, Cameron? I can't remember if you said or not.
I did not say. I probably will. Like I said, I think I just said it's a good excuse to go home. The problem is, man, you just start working and you know, I don't know. I like working more than I like traveling sometimes.
Right.
But I didn't say that. That's not the truth that I just said. There's something that's not like going around to conferences a lot is really, really cool. But like, you know, 5 or 6 in a year adds up. I mean, like if every month between like holidays and friends' birthdays and people getting married and stuff like that, you kind of need to find some space for yourself to kind of, I think, get good work done, or even just think about, like, you know, the same kind of time that you spend thinking through responsive web design. You know, I need to think about, you know, sort of our company and our product and things like that. And there's always something really, really fun and cool to do, especially, I mean, New York is a pretty special place for there to be. I mean, if you like things like music or art or cool things, like New York is a pretty good spot to be. Where are you guys located? Where are the like actual cities where you guys are located?
I'm in.
Yeah, Stephen, where are you?
I'm in Manchester.
Okay.
England.
And Brandon and I are in the very exciting location of Indianapolis in the Midwest.
Yeah, I grew up, or I lived, I guess I lived for 7 or 8 years, excuse me, in Valparaiso.
Awesome.
The Valpo girls, man, they rock.
Yeah. Well, I was like 8, so I know exactly how they rock.
Yeah, they like the 8-year-olds.
That's wheelhouse ladies time.
They're desperate and lonely.
Nice. Wow. Lots of popcorn up there.
I actually love, for the years that I was there, it was awesome. Like, we lived by a lake, you know, you just kind of chilling in a lake. I don't know. It's not, you don't do anything when you're 8, right? You just walk around and you look at stuff, and lake is a good thing to look at. You just kind of, like, you know, try to nail things to like trees, like, oh, let's make a treehouse. And you just like nail like one log to a tree and you're like, I'm over it.
Nice.
Dude, I tried doing a treehouse when I came back to England, and yeah, it just totally collapsed on me. So that wasn't a fun experience. My friend was stood there laughing his head off. Didn't help me.
Yeah.
Is that pretty recently that was one of your things that you did?
Yeah, it was yesterday.
Yeah. No, can't blame your friend.
In my early teens, so yeah.
Yeah, weird factoid. Orville Redenbacher is from Valparaiso.
Because
he actually went to Purdue. He's a Purdue alum. That's how I know that.
And he ended up, so I grew up, like, after I left Valparaiso, I moved to a town called Coronado in San Diego, California. And that's where that guy retired.
Oh,
I saw
shit.
That guy around. He had stickers that said, like, it was just like, I met Orville Redenbacher. He had I met Orville Redenbacher stickers that he would give you that you could be like, blam.
That is awesome. Wow.
That's crazy that guy was following me around like that. That's weird.
Yeah, I felt like when I first showed up at Purdue, like, everybody's favorite snack was popcorn. Like, at any time you walk through the dorms, you would just smell popcorn. It was so strange to me.
What year did you graduate Purdue?
04.
04. Do you know a guy named, did he go there? Kevin DeWitt? Do you know a guy named Kevin DeWitt?
It doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah. I don't know. I graduated college in 04, and a buddy of mine, I think he went, the guy I grew up in Indiana, maybe his older brother did. And you don't know Ed Finkler, who was there in the development thing. You know that guy?
No. There were only about 30,000 students every year at Purdue, so.
Every year?
Unfortunately, I didn't know everybody, all 30,000 of them.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's a huge school. It's crazy.
Whoa.
You get it? Like, I had classes where there would be 200 people in the class easily.
Yeah.
I had a class about wine appreciation taught by Professor Vine. That was my favorite.
I thought that was pretty awesome. Cool. That's his last name.
Yeah, okay. That's his last name. And his family was like came from wineries and like all this shit. It was pretty awesome. So, all right. Well, thanks for being on the podcast, Cameron. This was a lot of fun. We're going to end it there. As always, you can tweet us anytime at Talentopoly. And if you use RSS, Instacast, or iTunes, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. By subscribing to our podcast, you'll help fuel our egos and finance our incredibly unhealthy diet of deep fried.
Dude, you're so clearly reading this right now. you gotta get relaxed.
It is scripted.
Your unhealthy diet of deep fried Krispy Kreme donut burgers.
Fuck yeah. Have you had one?
That's a real thing?
It's a real thing. They have it at the Indiana State Fair.
No, I have not. That's awesome.
It's real. They take a Krispy Kreme donut, they cut it in half, put the burger fixings inside, and there you go.
Boom. Yeah. I have no problem with that at all. I would eat that for sure.
Well, so you're going to have a donut with meat in it.
Oh. Yes. Yeah, it's bizarre, but it's actually delicious. Oh. So one of these days, we'll get Cameron to eat one of those.
I'm actually on a diet that I created called Scotchkins, which is vaguely Atkins plus scotch. so I don't think a Krispy Kreme donut burger Scotchkins approved, but the burger part is. But I'd still break it. Yeah. I'd break it for something like that.
Yeah, or if you move to like the deep fried diet at some point, let me know.
Yeah,
we'll hook you up.
I don't think that's not going to take you in the right direction.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next week.